This podcast is rated S for science and also for spoilers and swearing. There's going to be swearing.
Something is killing these people and sucking them dry.
Run! It's a stampede!
What'd you do to my son?
Where's Dom?
The only way you're getting your son back is if you and I play a little basketball. Pete, send this clown to the rejects.
Wait.
Welcome, everybody, to Cinematica Animalia, the podcast where we break down the science of movie monsters. I am Adam Hasek. I am a disease ecologist at the University of Arkansas, soon to be at the Ben-Gurion University of the Negev. Beside me, as always, is the Baroness, Libby Young, our story specialist and writer at Short Story Soup. Joining us is Dave, a vet all the way from sunny on fire Canada. Sam is once again on assignment, scoping out a good bunker to hide from the trolls.
Okay, see, I'd heard that they were adapting Norwegian policy lately. You know how we're trying to use more ecologically friendly models to try and get things done?
Mm-hmm.
And that they've just recently found out that a really good wolf repellent is troll urine.
Ah.
And so unfortunately, they put Sam somewhere with a whole bunch of bottles of Gatorade and some empty buckets. And they're just hoping that he can take care of the country and really help to do his part going forward.
That actually explains why he's at the cidery. So he's just drinking gallons of cider.
The Howard Hughes approach.
Yeah.
Way to the future. Yeah, so this week we are going to be touching on Space Jam, A New Legacy. I know we said last week we're going to be looking at freshwater horror. Some things got changed around. So, and because Space Jam came out, and, you know, we had some things to say about it. So we decided to focus on Space Jam a little bit. Touching on the original, you know, from 25 years ago, but mostly we're going to be focusing on this new movie. But before we start, I think we have some news. Continuing with more horrible climate-related news, Europe is completely underwater right now. Germany has had some catastrophic and horrendous flooding. It looks like something out of a disaster movie that Jerry Butler would star in.
Mm-hmm.
Geostorm, in that, somewhere in that realm, maybe even Greenland. But the Netherlands had an enormous flood because a dike broke. Germany was just straight up torrential rains and rivers overflowing, and unfortunately a lot of people have died and a lot of people are still missing. So this is not good, and it's only going to get worse going forward. So climate is no joke.
Well, I will try to lighten the mood. I feel like we've just had a lot of bad news lately, and I found a piece of news actually that goes really well with Space Jam New Legacy, because Space Jam New Legacy is in the digital world.
So the serververse.
Yes, serververse. So this is kind of cool. This is a bit of science tech, if you will, on that end of the spectrum. So this week, a paralyzed man's brainwaves were converted to speech for the first time. So basically, this guy had a stroke when he was 20. He's 36 years old now. He can't talk, can't move, paralyzed from the neck down. How he communicated before was he has limited head movement. So he had a poker essentially attached to his forehead and he would poke at vocabulary words. So scientists went in and sort of developed what his vocabulary is by him, you know, communicating that to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then matched it with the brain waves. And then through obviously a shit ton of smart people in science, we're able to use artificial intelligence to distinguish the patterns in the data and tie them into his words. So the tests kind of worked. So they prompted him with questions like, how are you today? Would you like some water? And he was able to answer with responses like, I'm very good. And no, I'm not thirsty.
Holy shit.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So super, super cool science news. And obviously super cool that this person that was able to communicate very limitedly can now possibly have a lot more open communication. You know,
it's absolutely incredible.
God, science is cool.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Relating to that and kind of building off of it, I think it was last week or maybe the week before, there was somebody who was either born without an arm or they had it amputated for some reason, but they were able to get that person's brain to be able to recognize tactile input from an artificial hand. So basically this person was able to feel again with an artificial hand.
Holy crap.
Which was really, really cool.
Wow.
If I'm remembering correctly, it was good enough that they could distinguish between textures of like something soft versus something hard.
Wow.
Which is incredible.
Yeah.
Science rules.
Bill Nye the Science Guy.
So moving on today to the movie, we're going to be covering the second Space Jam as well as, to a certain degree, the first Space Jam. And to give us kind of a summary of this film, Libby, do you want to run us through everything?
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed they didn't call it like Space Jammed.
or Space Jam, Son of Space Jam.
Yeah. So Space Jam New Legacy is a remake of the original Space Jam with Michael Jordan. And it is about a superstar basketball player that no one has heard of called LeBron James. Who
sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've heard of him.
Who his son is taken from him by a computer algorithm called Algorithm. And they are trapped inside of a serververse in the Warner Brothers studio. So he has to play Algorithm in order to get his son back in a game of high stakes basketball, in which if he wins, he gets his son back, but also he gets his freedom, because if he loses, everyone that gets sucked into the serververse, including his family, including a bunch of flight attendants and random people,
barbershop trapped in there patrons
ever.
Yep.
Yes.
People, flight attendants, like, this is the most amazing technology I've ever seen. People watching a live stream get sucked into their phone. Where does their body go? How do they get there? Mm. Are they souls?
Hopefully the captain of the plane wasn't watching as well.
I really hope not.
So, yep. So high stakes basketball game that his computer savvy son invented. So it's like a twist on basketball.
Dumb
so
he has to
learn to be a better father and include his son's interests and let go of his pipe dream of his son playing basketball.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think we need a brief summary of the first Space Jam. I would assume most of you have seen it if you're listening into this.
Most of us are going to be probably around our age, and us of an age grew up with Space Jam.
Yeah, I definitely had t-shirts and lunchboxes and adored that film. So moving on to what do we like about this movie? Because I think there is a lot to like here. I was skeptical at first, but
I was not looking forward to watching this at all. It came out, so I figured it was our duty as the podcast to cover it. But I was very pleasantly surprised by this movie. The beginning was absolutely awful, so I was very kind of worried about that. But as soon as the tunes came in and we started getting into ridiculous hijinks, I really came to appreciate those characters. It was nice seeing them again. I appreciated some of the little inserts of other movies or references to other Warner Brothers properties,
mm-hmm.
which got a little heavy-handed at times, but I still appreciated it. Like Rick and Morty coming in and saying even they couldn't figure out Taz, the Tasmanian Devil, like what the fuck is going on with him? He's your problem now. Like that was really, really funny to me. So the tunes were actually the best part, and I think what I liked about this is it was not as trash as I thought it was going to be. Not a good movie by any means, but much better than I anticipated.
Couch that statement.
Libby?
Yeah, I think I felt the same. LeBron did not do a good job, in my opinion.
Awful.
It's like basically the first part of the movie was garbage. The second part of the movie was fantastic. Third and fourth part was eh. So that second part of the movie with when they're in Toon World and it's just the Looney Tunes being Looney Tunes brought back so much, you know, fun childhood nostalgia. But it was like modernized with, you know, new jokes. And Adam and I were just laughing our ass off.
Like legitimately laughing out loud. I was not anticipating it at all. The whole sequence in Metropolis. Just so good.
Yeah, going through the different zones. Yeah, I think that at first this movie was annoying me as I like watched it through. And then I pictured that if I had brought like a small kid to see this and I was just catching the adult jokes as they got excited to see cartoon characters and see the Matrix and get the little references here or there that they might pull off. And my appreciation of the film drastically shifted. I found myself just kind of like enjoying, and there were enough like little stupid comments in there, like when Don Cheadle's AI character shows up and you see the program kick in and it makes him taller than LeBron as he's like standing over top of him. Or even the comment between LeBron and his brother when the AI first pops up and it's this big moment. And then like LeBron leans down to his son and he's like, the AI is black. And his son's like, yeah, that's really cool. And I was like, oh, yeah.
His brother's like, the internet's black.
Yeah.
I was pleasantly surprised. There was still enough of this that I like felt a little bit. I mean, it was not my Space Jam, but I am also not a small child enjoying this. And I did have this like super grumpy adult moment where I was like, that's not how basketball's played. that was followed by a exact moment from one of the characters where they were like, hey, like, this is a video game. We're having fun. The new generation actually plays a lot more. And then they make fun of LeBron for being too sturdy. And I was like,
I was about to say, you were LeBron.
I've become what I hate.
We have to remember, Dave is 6'7" and really good at basketball. So.
He is.
I felt there was enough to really to like here.
What did we didn't like?
I think, though, your comment about, like, this is not my Space Jam is kind of what I didn't like. Like, who is this movie for? Because it's a PG kids movie, but all the references, all the tiebacks, all the characters are for people our age.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Looney Tunes were for people that are our parents' age, almost. Like, yeah. We were exposed to that, and we were on the very tail end of it 25 years ago. And then all these characters they're bringing in, kids, I would assume kids nowadays don't know who they are. Like, the Flintstones make an appearance. I mean, people know who DC characters are, but I don't know if they're watching them as much as we would have when we were kids. Like, it's...
The Mask was in there.
The Mask? they tie into Game of Thrones, which is, again, for people our age.
I did love the chicken riding the dragon with the, like, I say, winter is coming.
Foghorn Leghorn. I loved Yosemite Sam in Casablanca.
That was so good.
Yeah, the, like, play it again, yeah. Sam. Oh, you've got baggage. I can relate.
That was so fun.
I think my biggest gripe about this movie was you saw, in reference to this, you saw so many WB characters, right? You saw everything under the sun.
Mm.
And I did not get my damn Warner Frog.
Michigan J. Frog.
I wanted a halftime show of Hello, My Baby, Hello, My Darling, Hello, My Ragtime Gal. He was gone. I was really sad.
I bet he's in the audience somewhere, but yeah, it's sad we didn't get a big appearance from him.
On a serious note with the film, there were tons of plot problems. There was story issues, which we'll go into later.
Bad acting.
Right. Things just didn't flow. I will say the one area that like stood out to me as a personal like meh moment was Lola Bunny's gets to be part of the Amazons and she's like training and she's going through this big championship and Bugs shows up and immediately is like, hey, I know you've been training for years and all this, but can you fuck off right now and come play a basketball game? And she's like, you have to just give me like 1 hour and I'll be done this. And like, yes, it works out for her. And spoiler alert, she does end up saving them from falling into the lava, Bugs and LeBron, which puts her in a position where she gains Amazon status anyway. But that could have easily cost her something she'd been training for 4 years. And she tells Bugs that, and she's like, just wait until we're done. And he's like, no, but like, I want to go right now.
Yeah. But Bugs has always been kind of notoriously a selfish dickhead, so.
He's super selfish. And yes. I think one thing that this, especially the intro with, like, LeBron getting to Toon World and Bugs is the only one there, and all the hijinks that ensue from that, kind of made me realize, or not really realize from when I was a kid, Bugs is a terrifying character.
Yeah.
He has so many powers and so many abilities to do whatever he wants, however he wants, and really fuck over everyone around him. It's honestly horrifying.
Yeah. I mean, he wants to be hunted. He dresses LeBron up as Elmer Fudd, and he's like, you have to hunt me.
Yeah.
Now you say duck season.
Hunt me! Hunt me! Hunt me! Somebody hunt me!
Don't hunt him to completion.
Hunt me!
Trivia. You guys had some interesting trivia about one of the characters that was conspicuously absent from this film.
I do. Yeah. I'm not going to touch on the other controversy, quote, controversy for this movie because it's fucking stupid. I'm not even going to give it the time of day here. But I think the big thing with one of the characters being missing is Pepe Le Pew, the notoriously, our generation would call him rapey, skunk from the Looney Tunes, who was always after a cat and would always make advances, never respect her space, that kind of thing. And apparently, there was a scene with Pepe Le Pew in this movie where Bugs and LeBron have a conversation with him about consent and what it means to not be a creep.
Oh, cool.
And I think it's really unfortunate that they cut that because that would have been really cool and a really good teachable moment, I think.
Hollywood using its power for good?
Right?
Nah, let's cut that shit.
Let's just not have him in it. Like, no, have him in there, but show why he's problematic.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's a bummer. And I think that really could have been a good moment there.
So what big controversy were you wanting to avoid?
The big controversy that people seem to have a problem with is that Lola Bunny, the character made up for it, the original Space Jam, no longer has boobs. And who gives a fuck? She's a cartoon rabbit.
Listen, if I've learned anything as my 33 years as a woman is that we are always reduced to a pair of tits.
And notoriously, bunnies have boobs in nature, right, Adam? That's what they're known for?
Yeah, I know, but like, they're even bigger in nature and they made them smaller in the movie, so it's not fair, right?
Jesus.
I'm obviously being sarcastic if you can't tell.
Hurry, voice is on the prowl!
Whoa! Why are they so sexy?
Hip-hop! Crunk! Attack!
They make me really uncomfortable.
So, moving on to the science of this film, but before we talk about the science...
Before we get into science, if you want to find Sam and I on Twitter, you can find Sam at Big Dr. Fishboy. I'm at Hasek Adam. If you want to check in with some of Libby's writing, it's shortstorysoup.substack.com. Sign up for biweekly stories from the mind of the Baroness. If you want to check out some of the more hardcore science that Sam and I get into, it's ecologyforthemasses.com. If you want to see some more from the podcast itself, check us out at cinematicaanimalia.com. If you want to contact the podcast, please reach out to us at cinematica.animalia@gmail.com. And we also have a Discord server. Get on Discord, search Cinematica Animalia, sign up there to talk to us, engage in for some gaming maybe. I know we did a gaming episode a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. If you have suggestions for monsters, if you have comments on anything, reach out, talk to us. We'll be here.
You can challenge one of us to a basketball game.
Well, you can challenge us to basketball and you'll probably lose because I suck. But if you want to challenge us to dom ball, I'll whoop your ass.
There it is. You heard it first.
So in terms of the science and moving through for our first ones, we kind of decided as a group that doing cartoon Looney Tune characters was not exactly going to be super useful for talking about rules of ecology and physiology. And even some of the worlds that they explore, we didn't really feel like doing DC or Metropolis world or talking about the Matrix world. And we've been to Game of Thrones world before. So,
also known as Westeros,
we decided to focus our energy this time on the Monstars and the Goon Squad. The common, I guess, antagonist would be the word that we use for these creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That they experience and fight with. Now, the first big question that pops up is making a monster. The very first Space Jam, originally, if you guys remember, the Monstars are these tiny little worm creatures who get a basketball.
Rubs.
That is given to various famous basketball players who imbue their energy into the ball, which then is returned to the Monstars that when they touch it, grow to enormous size, gaining physical strength and agility, as well as an innate knowledge of the game, as opposed to the primary villains that are faced off in this newest Space Jam New Legacy, are a group of human basketball players, who are taken as their digital copies and then imbued with the characteristics of animals.
Yeah.
Obviously, in a digital world, you can take anything and mix anything with anything. But for our characters in this, we want to talk about a little bit about what you would have to do if you actually wanted to gene edit. If you wanted to take an adult and build them into a kick-ass basketball star or a half spider lady or a... I think he's a ripoff of the Falcon. I couldn't decide. The guy with the blue wings.
Oh, Anthony Davis?
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's because his nickname is the bird, right?
I don't think it's because his nickname is the bird. It's because he's known for having an enormous wingspan.
Oh, okay.
So Anthony Davis is a very large, I don't know what position he plays because I don't follow basketball at all.
I clearly know about basketball.
All I know about him is he has those enormous eyebrows, which I thought was, oh, to go back to the movie real quick, I found it very interesting that for this movie that I'm sure LeBron was a producer on, that they got to shit on him so much, and also they were shitting on the other basketball players who were in the movie so much, like making fun of Anthony Davis's eyebrows, which is something that's been a part of his entire career, because he has one of the most prominent unibrows I've ever seen in my life.
Holy cow, holy cow, that girl's got a unibrow, holy cow, that guy's got one too.
Now, there are a couple of different ways to make the Monstars. So the ones from the first movie, whether or not it's injecting them with large amounts of growth hormones, whether or not it's genetically infusing them with various compounds that will trigger growth, whether or not it's growing them in a tube or just replacing them magic style with the absolute or the giant monsters secretly, sort of wave a curtain and then throw them into the back, kind of prestige style. But the most interesting mechanism that we want to talk about today is gene editing. As a brief overview, gene editing falls into two different categories in modern day. So there are germline modifications. That's the idea that we take genes and edit them in embryos, eggs, sperm, and then end up building organisms which come with certain characteristics. So we start at the very beginning with the blueprint before the organism has been built or designed. We alter what we want there, and then they grow into whatever it is we've wanted to design. The second one, and the one that's going to be our focus for this episode, is gene editing in adults. So the idea of taking what are called somatic cells, so adult cells, and trying to alter them in such a way that you change proteins that they're producing, change their organization, change the way that they bind together. This technology is being used in current day society, just in a very limited capacity, mostly aimed at fighting cancer, which we'll talk briefly about.
So we're not talking about the South Park episode where Kyle gets implants to be an NBA player, knee implants.
No, I don't think so. Nor do I think we're talking about a situation where we can make Diana Taurasi half snake.
Right. So CRISPR, Libby or Adam, do you know that much about CRISPR?
Very vaguely. My research has never touched on to genetics. So it's a big buzzword in the science, in the sciences, but it's not something that I'm very experienced with.
I know that they've been, and I cannot for the life of me recall what, but I know CRISPR has been making some news lately with some successes.
Yeah. So purely out of laziness, because some of my old graduate research was aimed at RNA and DNA modification, I was very excited when CRISPR came out, but really hadn't sat down and done a lot of research to read up and sort of fully understand the process. And you know what? I'm thankful to Space Jam New Legacy for making me do that. CRISPR, it stands for Cluster of Regularly Interspaced Short Palindromic Repeats, something that we don't really need to know.
Weird they call it CRISPR.
And CRISPRs are these specialized stretches of DNA. Now, originally, CRISPR technology was actually adapted from the natural defenses of a couple of different bacteria. So bacteria can find themselves in a situation where they're attacked by a certain type of virus that focuses on bacteria, what are called bacteriophages.
Bacteriophage.
They're so cool. They stick onto the outside of the bacteria and they inject their DNA that they want to stick in and will eventually be incorporated into the DNA of the bacteria. In these situations, the bacteria really doesn't want to be changed. Most of the time, the information the bacteriophage is putting in is basically to make the bacteria its slave, to make it replicate a bunch more of the bacteriophage that will eventually break and lyse the cell so it can move on and start attacking other bacteria.
Think about Alien, the xenomorph, but it's a little bit of itty-bitty virus. And it was like the alien put like a million of itself inside of a person and it just burst and millions of aliens came rushing out of it.
Certain bacteria have generated these types of proteins, what are called Cas proteins, and they can produce these. They actually are encoded with these sort of middle segments that are carried by the bacteria. They're released out into the cell and they go on the hunt. And when these DNA from the virus end up flying by, these proteins cut them and they chop them up into harmless little pieces that will not be integrated. This system, which is super fucking cool, also has the ability to grab some of these segments and incorporate it into their DNA going forward so they can learn to fight new bacteriophages. So this is an internal immune system. Scientists have been going nuts about this because it is a cellular immune system.
Which is really cool.
It's so fucking cool. The groups of scientists kept looking at this technology for a little while and realized that they can actually take these Cas proteins, or what are known as CRISPR-associated proteins, and retrain them. So you can build them to contain DNA sequences of things that we want to cut. And if you then take these proteins, you basically build a bacteria to build Cas proteins with certain sequences that you're interested in, you can release them into areas that you have DNA, and they can chop the DNA up. Now, why this is really useful is that gene editing is a giant pain in the ass. If you're trying to send something into the nucleus of a cell that you're trying to alter, and you want to then get a new sequence integrated, the first thing you have to do is you have to break the DNA apart, and you have to find specific areas to aim for. So if you can take these custom proteins that will come in and they will cut on either side of a specific sequence, you then create a gap in the genetic material.
Mm-hmm.
The first area that this is super useful for is that if the body then immediately fills in that gap, they just close that off, or they do one of Adam's favorite things and they just mutate, they oftentimes will create an inactive gene. So for a lot of genetic diseases, this is showing the potential to stick this in and basically chomp a gene. And let's say that Adam has a gene that's is overproducing mucus in his lungs, or is not producing enough fluid, or Adam's in a situation where there's a misformed protein that's forming in his brain.
It seems weirdly targeted.
If we can give a protein in that attacks and destroys that gene and just turns it off, that can be really fucking useful. Now, the other thing that we've been using this technology for, and this is where it gets really complicated, is if you can simultaneously add these proteins that chomp that DNA, and then also provide the cell with a new DNA sequence that it can incorporate into that space, you can start putting new genes in.
Gene editing.
Yeah!
So the long and short of it is cut, copy, and paste, but with your DNA.
Yeah, exactly. Now, this new technology is still in really early stages. Primarily, the way that we've been using it right now is that we take out certain types of immune cells. So let's say that Sam is fighting troll cancer.
Hypothetically, let's say he's fighting it.
We end up taking those immune cells and we reprogram them to attack certain things that are prominent with the cancer cells. We can then stick them back in. They will then go off and they'll attack that cancer for us, theoretically. Now, the bigger widespread question of how this can be used, because obviously it's got uses in human medicine, agriculture, animal husbandry, but the big thing that they've been playing with is, how do we use this in an adult? And they have had some very limited but really promising success with, if you take these CRISPR proteins, you build a bunch of them, and then you stick them into what are called extracellular vesicles. So basically little balloons filled with the proteins that you want. And then you either inject them or in some cases aerosolize them and bring them into a human being. They will push up against the cells. Well, we haven't done human trials yet, but let's say mouse. They will push up against the outside of a mouse cell. They get pulled into the mouse cell and they can start working on adult tissue. You can target these to go after lung tissue, to go after muscle tissue. And this can be a way by which theoretically we could bring about some of the characteristics that we see inside of the Monstars as well as the Goon Squad. Do you guys know what a Belgian Blue is as far as a cattle?
I know the name. I can't. That's all I know, though.
Can you guys please on your computer type in a Belgian Blue cattle right now and look at a picture?
Wowzers.
That's a chunky, chunky lady.
Describe what you are seeing.
So a Belgian Blue is what you would get if a cow was on HGH and testosterone and protein and creatine and spent 12 hours at the gym every day.
See, I'm just seeing Terry Crews as a cow.
Yeah, that's better. I mean, that's exactly what I said.
Belgian Blues have a quality called double muscling, where basically they have an alteration that takes place in one of their myostatin genes that's been bred into them over time, which makes them create double layers of muscle over top of what would normally just be a single muscled area. The super cool thing about this isn't an added gene. This isn't even a gene mutation. What this is a disactivated gene. There's actually 11 nucleotides missing on one of their myostatin inhibition mechanisms. And as a result, they overmuscle. We have systems in place that stop Libby from just waking up and looking like Arnold Schwarzenegger because we don't want her growing tons of muscle all the time because it's not useful.
Maybe you don't.
Mm-hmm. These cows actually have a gene turned off. So that's one way that we could get the giant Monstars. If you inactivated some group of their muscle tissue that took away inhibition, they could just automatically muscle. It would take time, but they could end up with these big muscle boys and grow really big through that. Now, the more complicated thing would be the addition of animal genes.
Big time complications.
So trying to stick in spider, bird, other things like that. Because one, it's got to be targeted. You would have to give injections that would go after just the muscle or go after just the lungs. You could create some interesting alterations. I don't know why you would want them to look like birds or look like spiders if you could just make them grow fleshy legs.
I don't know why you would, but for this movie, we're going to say that we would because it's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, I was about to say intimidation factor, maybe.
In short, CRISPR is super cool. CRISPR could do this, but it would require gene labs working for extensively long periods of time to make small alterations to just one tissue that would require time as well to express it. Because when you change DNA, you also have to wait for the body to produce those associated proteins to grow in the ways that you want to. And this is why treatment of really complex conditions, whenever humans are like, oh, well, they're going to cure that gene misfunction or that, you know, gigantism or dwarfism, we'll just give them something, it'll make them grow properly. It is really fucking hard. It is a lot easier to start by altering the embryo.
Yep.
Instead of fixing the house, to just build the house properly the first time is unfortunately an easier process.
Make your designer baby. Don't try to take an adult and give them a snake leg. Tail.
Yeah.
Instead of
Would CRISPR work for Wetfire, the character who
absolutely
is
not
half water, half fire?
Absolutely not. But I do think that if this was a real life thing and not a computer thing, if Don Cheadle was secretly running an incubation chamber, he would have taken DNA from these various famous basketball players, implanted them into eggs, altered the DNA using CRISPR at a molecular level really early on, and then just grown these super loyal monster babies.
Which I think, for the purposes of this podcast, this movie, is what we're going to say that he did.
Yeah.
Good job, Don Cheadle.
Yeah, I mean, you know, oh, sorry. King Algae Rhythm. Such a dumb name. He's an AI. He's not an algorithm. Thank you, Libby, for bringing that point up before the podcast. Mm-hmm. So stupid. But yeah, so CRISPR is how we get into these monsters existing as monsters. Ecologically, evolutionarily, if we want to go back to the Monstars from the original Space Jam, we could just say that they're just like a weird hairless ape that kind of looks a bit more reptilian than they do mammalian. Yeah. But like we touched on with before with anything with shoulders and the kind of hominid humanoid appearance, that comes from a primate's arboreal evolutionary history. So at the risk of touching on that again, go back and listen to our Creature from the Black Lagoon episode. We've done this for other ones. But basically, because of the way they walk and they move like humans, they had to have come from some kind of primate-type ancestor that lived in the trees originally. But
yeah,
for the Goon Squad, we have Don Cheadle having made these horrific creations using CRISPR technology and the DNA of Anthony Davis, Anika Ogwumike, I hope I pronounced her name correctly, and Diana Taurasi. So Anthony Davis became a bird person because of his big wingspan. Diana Taurasi became a half snake because she's known as the White Mamba. And then Anika Ogwumike is a spider lady. I couldn't find anything about her, what she's known for, but my guess is that she is known for being like really good defensively and having like arms all over the place, maybe. So that's why she's a spider.
Oh, cool.
Maybe she has really good handles. I don't know.
I'm super handles. Ever since I was belt high to a buckle, I was working on my ball handling and dribbling.
For our fun ecology slash physiology debate, and I'm actually very excited for this.
Yes.
Adam, you wanted to start us off with discussing your thoughts on why putting animals in a basketball court, even if it's video game style with power-ups and time control, might not be the best idea.
Well, as we know from the documentary Air Bud, there's no rules against having an animal in the game, so it's legal, technically. Nope. But having animals play these sports would not necessarily work for many of these. The only one I can really think of that might work somewhat is Taz the Tasmanian Devil and Foghorn Leghorn the Rooster. Both of them are pretty aggressive animals, and they'd be good to have on your team from the point of view of wanting to have somebody... You want them on your team as opposed to against you, because Taz is insane and aggressive and will eat you, literally eat you. That's what he does. And then Foghorn Leghorn is a rooster, and they're known for their aggression and using their cockles, not their cockles, their claws. They can be very aggressive and really mess you up. So they are the only ones that might work. But for the most part, these animals are going to have certain behaviors, traits, characteristics that make that prohibit them from being good athletes, especially good basketball players.
Now so, I'm just picturing Foghorn and Leghorn like disemboweling people on the court. I don't know why my brain went straight to that.
That's what it would be.
It would be a fun movie. It would not be a good kids movie.
I mean, Foghorn Leghorn is enormous. Yeah. He's like 2 meters tall, around 6.5 feet. Imagine a bigger cassowary, which is a terrifying bird to begin with.
Well, yeah, that's what I kept picturing was emus and ostrich and cassowary, which do that. That's what they do with their defensively is they take that talon and or claw and just shred you.
For sure. Not a joke.
Now, there's also some disadvantages with throwing in certain genetic material. As we've talked about before, spiders are great, they're cool, and they terrify most people. Spiders don't really work when they get big, do they, Adam?
No. Spiders, the biggest spider you can have is going to be about the size of a house cat, and even then it's not quite that big, it's just its leg span is about that big. There's limits on mass, and even when they are that big, they are incredibly squishy. So if you passed Anika the ball, it would just kill her. Because she'd be very squishy. The force of it would just demolish her. Unfortunately, that's one of the risks you have with having a tarantula as a pet. If you're holding the tarantula and you drop your tarantula, or he or she crawls out of your hand and falls from, like, let's say, waist or chest height to the floor, they'll probably die just because they'll get squished on impact.
The impact. Huh.
Where is that giant spider from?
I believe it's in the Amazon. It was discovered 3 or 4 years ago by a researcher, a wildlife photographer, who discovered it because he heard it walking behind him when it broke a stick by walking on it.
Fun.
Usually when you mention giant spiders, I think of the bloody, bloody giant spiders and the
bloody, bloody huntsman.
Bloody.
Bloody.
Bloody huntsman's got me chuffed.
There's more car spots and they've got Pepsi Max and it's a little bit cheaper and it makes me chuffed. I've got a job at Subway and it makes me chuffed. Get smarts on telly and that makes me chuffed. A weekend in a Tuca gets me chuffed. Making good time on the freeway gets me chuffed.
Another issue with the spider real quick is that they are very sedentary animals. Wolf spiders are ones that don't build webs, for example, but they don't run back and forth all the time like you would need to for a basketball game where you're sprinting up and down, you know, between these four lines. We do work, whatever. There's a lot of running and sprinting and going back and forth in basketball. And spiders are sit-and-wait predators, and most of them just sit in a web and they wait for somebody to get trapped in it, like Sylvester got trapped, which was horrifying.
Oh my god, that was great. I was thinking, too, like, isn't, like, building a web and running, obviously, like, expending a lot of energy for those types of animals. So, like, even if she could build a web on the court, she'd probably be, like, out for a bit.
She'd be sitting there and just waiting for somebody to get stuck in it, like Sylvester did, and then she would eat him. And then she would, some spiders will eat their web then that night and make a new one in the morning.
Wait, they eat their web?
Some of them do.
Huh.
To get the energy.
Really?
A lot of reptiles, and I think amphibians as well, when they shed their skin, they will eat it, because that's a quick bit of energy right there just to get back.
Yep.
And then some spiders will consume their web afterwards to kind of get that energy and material back.
On top of, you know, spiders not being ideal, the bird character. Birds have weight limits, right? In terms of you can't just throw wings on a human, or was the childhood version of me that really wanted to make some wings and try to jump off my roof wrong? Because if it is, I missed out.
Dave Icarus.
I mean, if it makes you feel any better, yeah, Dave Icarus is pretty great. If it makes you feel any better, my thought was that I could use a plastic grocery bag as a parachute and jump off of the roof of a roof. And I definitely tried on a low roof. It didn't work, surprisingly.
Huh.
But yes, there are weight limits and there are physics involved with being a certain size. And Anthony Davis is a very, very large man to begin with. His Goon Squad character is also quite large. And although he has some pretty big wings that go from his shoulders to the floor, so close to 7 feet.
Yeah.
You know, over 2 meters. If you want to lift up a human that is over 200 pounds, over 100 kilograms, you're going to need wings that are enormous.
No, you talked about the largest spider, but, like, what's the largest flight, like, bird in flight?
The California condor. Well, it has the largest wingspan.
Okay.
We also wanted to briefly talk about why just putting together the Toon Squad. And I do share the exhaustion that LeBron seems to feel, where he keeps saying, like, why are we not getting Superman or King Kong?
Yeah.
We had briefly discussed that there might be problems with bringing a bunch of bunnies and pigs and coyotes and road runners onto the same basketball court and saying, please play basketball. And
Wild West Rascals. I think that was one of my favorite jokes of the entire movie, when he tells Sam to shoot the ball and he pulls out his six shooters and just shoots the fuck out of the basketball. That's great. A lot of animals have a lot of instincts and behaviors associated with them that would make them terrible for this. So we've talked about it a little bit with the Goon Squad, and one more in the Goon Squad, Dinah Tessari as the White Mamba. Snakes and other reptiles.
Right.
Birds are also reptiles, don't forget, like Anthony Davis. But snakes don't really move. They can move very fast when they want to, but it's in very short bursts, and it's not very consistent. So she would maybe move fast to grab somebody and then swallow them whole and sit there for a long time, pretty inactive.
This is digesting.
So I think Lola got snatched 3 or 4 times. So sorry about you, Lola. You gone. But Bugs is a rabbit. Porky is a pig. Daffy is a duck. So he's a monster. Sam wanted us to make sure we mentioned that he would be probably arrested for sex crimes, because ducks are horrible animals.
Well, I guess it makes sense. He's coach.
He is the coach. So yeah. You have Sylvester as a cat. Tweety is a little bird. Wile E. Coyote is a coyote, and the Roadrunner is a Roadrunner. Animals like Porky, Bugs, and Tweety, and Roadrunner, they would all have a bit of a prey drive. Less so Porky, because pigs are kind of like in the middle as far as trophic levels go, like as far as trophic being things like predator and prey dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
Bugs, Sylvester, and Tweety would all probably run as soon as they saw a large predator, like Dinah Tessari. Oh, and Lola, she would also run. Maybe like Anthony Davis, because he looks like a big bird of prey. And then Anika Ogwumike as a giant spider.
Mm-hmm.
So it would not be... They're fast, some of them. And, you know, bunnies are pretty quick. And we made a point, and we chatted about this before the podcast, that if you have Bugs and Lola, and they did get together as a couple, they'd be able to field an entire league's worth of rabbits in a relatively short amount of time, because they have such short generation times and high sex drives. But...
Yes.
That entire league would run at the first sight of a predator.
I'm just picturing both Lola and Bugs cowering in a corner after tearing themselves out. tiring themselves out, like wide-eyed and panicked and like breathing really heavy at the sight of all these predators, and they can't escape from them.
Yep. That's exactly what would happen. They'd also run from LeBron because he's huge.
Right. And that terrifying scene that I feel they glossed over, where the time-controlling creature puts the Roadrunner on the Wile E. Coyote's plate and then puts like knives and forks in front of him. And I was like, so you guys are just full on admitting that two of your characters are constantly in a battle where one of them wants to physically kill and eat the other one.
Yeah.
And you're okay with that.
They found Tweety because Sylvester had swallowed her.
Right. And her first comment when she's like thrown up is, oh God, what year is it?
Mm-hmm.
How is she not digested? What's going on there? But yeah.
She's attuned. She can survive anything.
You're right.
The concept of trying to bring a whole bunch of animals onto the screen and letting them play basketball, really cute. In practical terms, would be a lot of fighting, fucking, killing, and eating.
I will say that the real life version of this that actually does work, for those who've not seen it, is the Puppy Bowl.
Yeah.
Which, Dave, are you familiar with Puppy Bowl?
No. What is the Puppy Bowl?
Every year after the Super Bowl, they have Puppy Bowl, in which they put, like, I don't know, like 30 to 40 tiny puppies on a football field and let them play football. And they film it.
Nice.
And it's a pretty big draw every year.
Yeah.
For our North American, specifically American listeners.
Oh, sometimes the United States is good.
We're recounting the greatest moments from all the furriest years of Puppies at Play. This is Puppy Bowl, Inside the Bowl.
Before we move away from these animals and what would or would not be good for basketball, we have to have a special guest appearance for some of his recommendations for good animals. Quick cameo by Sam. And as he put it, so much potential. We have the Dunkleosteus. I'm guessing that's some kind of dinosaur. We have Jaminals, specifically space Jaminals. We have the Hoopopopotamus, which, you know, take that as it is. And also, finally, the Loch Ness Monster.
That's perfect.
Yep.
I feel like Jaminals is some kind of like delicious animal cracker.
I think Jaminals is actually a brand of pajamas.
That you can eat.
Maybe. Edible pajamas. Find them in your local stores.
Sam would also like it well established that he takes personal gripe against the Tasmanian devil.
He does, but I'm going to ignore it because Taz is always my favorite and he's the best.
The Tasmanian devil's liable to get you. He's a mean, vicious, nasty, no good, baggy-eyed, marble-headed ignoramus. He's a stupid,
flattery will get you nowhere.
Moving into the last section of our podcast, Libby, you had some thoughts, as always, on our movie story, things that worked, things that didn't work, and just general tropes you want to avoid.
Yeah, I think for me, I just wanted to touch on remakes. Obviously, this is a remake of sorts. It's not really a sequel, because I feel like sequels obviously have to acknowledge that the first one existed and that it is a continuation. They do hint at that they had played a game before and hinted at knowing Michael Jordan, but it was never like explicitly like this thing happened and oh, here we're doing this again. So to me, this movie is very much a remake. And I feel like with remakes, it did some things were really well done and some things were not so well done. I think as Adam mentioned earlier, it could not decide it. And I feel like a lot of movies have this issue is it can't decide its target audience. So here you have this cartoon / sports movie, and in any other universe under the sun, this would be a kid's movie, right? You know, very much how Space Jam, the original, was. Obviously, there is some adult humor thrown in, much like a lot of cartoons, but the original Space Jam was very much tried and true, like, for kids. This one felt like it was trying to do the fan service for those kids, for the millennials that grew up with Space Jam, but also somehow keep it a kid's movie as well. And I don't know if it quite succeeded in that. It really did feel more like a movie for adults. I know, Dave, you said that you thought of yourself like watching as a little kid bringing with you. But I don't know. Do you guys feel like it succeeded as a kid's movie as well?
No, I don't think it did at all. Like I was saying at the beginning, like you just touched on, it's not really geared for modern kids. All the references are for people our age who grew up with the original. Mm-hmm. And I think that they never would have done it because they wouldn't have made as much money. But I think they really missed an opportunity to have like a quote adult sequel.
Yeah.
For people that grew up with it, because that's kind of what they did. But they still just, they kind of dumbed it down in a lot of ways, or really kind of not whitewashed, but they really tried to quote clean it up. And if they had just stuck with
they tried to make it more wholesome.
Yeah, more wholesome, more of like a, I think it's called a four quadrant movie. So kids, young adults, parents, and other, mm-hmm. I can't remember what the fourth one is. But if they had made this more of like a PG-13 movie for people our age, I think it would have been a lot more fun, a lot better of a movie.
Yeah, I think that's the point I was trying to make, is I feel like whenever you do a remake, you really have to decide what you're trying to do with it. Another, and though this wasn't a remake, but same thing. For me, my biggest gripe with the Lord of the Rings series, I guess, is if you call them, was The Hobbit. Obviously, I love Lord of the Rings, fantastic movies. Hobbits are terrible movies. I was so disappointed. And I feel for the same reason that, especially in the first Hobbit, it could not find its narrative thread. It couldn't decide whether it wanted to be a children's movie or a movie for the fans of Lord of the Rings. Or an independent adult movie. you know, The Hobbit as a book is very different from Lord of the Rings. It is a children's book in a lot of ways. And I personally feel like they should have made it more of a, not children's movie necessarily, but more tried and true to the theme of the book. But they tried to make it epic and tried to make it more fan service-y for Lord of the Rings. And it just really strayed far from its narrative roots. And I feel like that is one of the biggest reasons that movie suffered and why it was horrible.
Yeah.
And I know that you guys brought up some concerns with late sequels as well, like Zoolander or
Dumb and Dumber.
Oh yeah, the second Dumb and Dumber.
I think when you decide that you want to do sequels, and obviously Hollywood loves cash grab, so you have these really successful movies that have done well, and then you're like, oh, it's been 10, 15 years, like let's throw it back, let's try to cash in on that once successful cash cow. And that's really hard to do, because most of your audience has grown or changed. They're not kids anymore, if it was like a kids movie like Space Jam. So you have to really target yourself in a way that is a fresh take on the story, or a inclusive, like fresh sequel, rather than just doing the same formula over and over again and then hoping that it'll be just like the first, because that's the point, right? You don't want to make it like the first. You want to make it something new.
Anchorman 2 is another one, but it's always, all those movies do is, remember that first one you liked a lot? Mm-hmm. Hey, here's another reference to that first one you liked a lot.
Yeah, it's trying too hard to capture the original, but also not deciding what it wanted to be.
The intended demographic for this video is studio executives and giant movie people. If you're going to make a series and put out sequels or prequels, wrap it up in three. Figure it out. Tell me the story. What happened? Close that chapter. New movie idea. No more fucking the 10th version is coming out. How deep into the story can how many? You're just making shit up now. The new cutoff is 2.
Moving into our last section and just doing a little bit of wrap up, did we feel bad for the monsters?
I think I do personally, especially at the end, because they're all digital constructs, and they seem to be, especially I think Anthony Davis, the bird, is the only one we really see make a comment about it, but they get deleted and he's like, wait, no, don't do it. And he gets deleted, and his entire existence was coming into existence for this game and then having everything taken away from him pretty quickly. And same for the other players, you know, Snake, Spider, and Time Person.
Well, I think it's even more horrible if it's our version, if they were actually created and it's CRISPR, and then they just get
put down. Creations, grown, raised, loyal to their father, and then just euthanized at the end because they failed the one thing they've been trained for.
So they're aware of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I will say the only one I didn't feel bad for was Kronos. That dude was a dick.
Would we recommend this movie?
If I was looking for something to take my kid to that I felt I'd get enough like internal jokes, and I felt that they might like do the little kid freak out afterward of like, oh my god, and then he jumped up, and then there was like the Game of Thrones, and then there was the Matrix. Yeah, 100%. As a adult, I'm trying to, but I really can't.
I think for me, I would recommend it if you are stuck on a 12-hour flight and really don't have anything to do. So, and it's an in-flight movie.
If you have access to HBO Max, which is how we watch this, if you don't have to pay for it, and if you need to kill 2 hours, somehow this movie's 2 hours long, go for it. I would recommend the second act, the beginning of the second act, where it's the LeBron and Bugs going around the serververse and collecting all the tunes. That part I would highly recommend because it's really funny. It's really well done.
Especially if you love Looney Tunes.
And yeah, especially if you grew up with the Looney Tunes. It was a really nice callback for all that. But for the rest of it, absolutely not. This movie sucks. So next week, I think the Baroness has our topic for us.
Yes, we had a suggestion from a user on Reddit called Culture Stress. And they suggested Princess Mononoke. We will be doing that, but I also wanted to conjoin Spirited Away onto top of that because it is the 20th anniversary. I'm not sure which month, but it's the year, so 20 years ago this year, Spirited Away was released. So we're going to do like a nice studio Ghibli.
Mm-hmm. Studio Ghibli.
I've never seen Spirited Away. I very much remember the trailers coming out, you know, 20 years ago when I was 11. And that was, I think, the very first time I saw, like, anime on TV as far as any kind of trailer. And I thought that was really interesting. I know it won a lot of awards, but I still have yet to see it. So I'm pretty excited about this.
Mm-hmm. Adam, you want to sign us off?
Absolutely. Remember, the monsters aren't real, but the science is.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
What in the Matrix hell?
Welcome to the space.
Welcome, King James. I am the king of this domain.
This is the serververse.
Welcome to the Space Jam.